Well, first of all, excuse me, I would like to thank the organizers for this kind invitation. So my talk is going to be a little bit different and will have a different scope than the previous talk, even though it's related to the last talk that you have heard here. So I have changed slightly the title of my talk, even though the topic will be very similar. So I'm going to talk about ensemble quantum computing with atoms in optical lattice. So I'm going to consider how to use these strongly correlated systems which are under control in optical lattices to do quantum computations. And this work has been done in collaboration with Carl Vollbrecht and Enrique Solano, who are at the Max Planck Institute for Quantum Optics in Garching. So as you have heard in the previous talk, now it's possible to confine atoms in optical lattices, basically having one atom per side. It is possible to manipulate these atoms using also laser to let them collide. So this is a system under control. And apart from studying physics with the system, there are some other applications that people are looking at. And in particular, two of these applications are related to the world of quantum information. One of them is quantum simulations, and the other one is quantum computation. So let me talk briefly about these two topics. So quantum simulations. So already Feynman in the 80s realized that if you have a quantum system and you want to simulate it with a classical system, for example, with a classical computer, it will be very hard to simulate. And the reason for that is that the number of parameters that you have in your system grows exponentially with the number of subsystems that you have. So he proposed to use quantum systems to simulate quantum systems. So somebody gives you a problem, gives you a Hamiltonian, many-body system, and you want to see or calculate some properties of this system, just take another system, a different system, which you can engineer the interactions in such a way that they resemble the ones of the system that you want to study, and do the experiment with this other system, and at the end measure the system, and it will tell you about the first system. So this is possible with optical lattices and with atoms in optical lattices, and the idea is just to put your atoms in these optical lattices, which are under control and at very low temperature. Now, maybe use also the internal levels of each of the atoms. So these atoms will have several internal levels. So for example, you want to study spin 1/2 systems, just take two internal level. Now put on top of that electromagnetic fields or electric fields or magnetic fields and so on. And at the end, do it in such a way that these atoms interact according to the Hamiltonian that you want to engineer. Now do the experiment with this Hamiltonian, look at the results, and then you understand what is going on in your original system. So, for example, this is obvious that how this could work in optical lattices. So, for example, you just take an optical lattice and write with this lattice, use some configuration by choosing the direction of the lasers which form these optical lattices. You can have square lattices, hexagonal lattices, and so on. Now put fermions at very low temperature and let them tunnel and interact, and you will have realized the Fermi-Hauer Hamiltonian. So you can study the physics of the Fermi-Hauer Hamiltonian. Another example is just take one atom on a single side. Don't let them now tunnel through each other, but just only virtually in such a way that you get some effective interaction between nearest atoms. Maybe put some staggered magnetic field, which you can simulate by putting a super lattice with double the period, which creates some star shift on the system. And by putting some also electric field, and you can simulate spin 1 lattice or spin 1 ladders and so on. So this is one possibility, one of the things that you can do with optical lattices. The other one is to perform quantum computation. So people realize that there are several problems which, if you could use superpositions and the tool that quantum mechanics gives you, then you could solve them in a much more efficient way. And atoms in optical lattice offer one physical system in which you can implement a quantum computer. So the idea would be, again, to have one atom per lattice side, and the atom will store now your quantum information, your states. Each of the atoms will have two internal levels, like 0 and 1, and this will store a qubit of information, and now you can perform quantum gates and do the quantum computation just by shining lasers on single sides, performing single qubit, what's so-called single qubit gates, or acting on two sides, let the atoms collide with each other in these two sides, and this will perform two qubit gates. And it has been shown that by concatenation of these two basic operations, single qubit gates and two qubit gates, we can perform any quantum computation. So the two qubit gate in particular could be realized as follows. This is something that we proposed 5 years ago. If you have these two internal levels 0 and 1 in your atom. Now, let's take this optical lattice, or in particular, any confining potential, to depend on the internal state. So in such a way that if your atom is in the state 0, it sees a different potential that it's in the state 1. And now you can move these potentials with respect to each other. And for example, if you just move the confining potential for level 1 to the right and then to the left, so what will happen is that if you are in the state 0, 0, so your atoms are in the state 0, 0, they will not move at all. If you are in the state 0, 1, then the 1 will go to the right and then to the left. If the state 1, 0, then the right will come here, will collide with the next one, which is in state 0, will come back. And in this collision, you will get a phase, which is responsible for the gate, the 2-qubit gate that you're performing. And if both are in state 1, they will move at the same time, so they will not collide. So there would be a collision between this atom and the next neighbor atom only if the first one is in 1 and the second one is in 0. You will get a phase, and this is the, it belongs to the set of universal gates. So with this gate plus this 1-qubit gate, one can perform all quantum computations. So in fact, this effect has been observed in the group of Immanuel Bloch last year. So what I told you before, actually it's not happening in the experiment, and I mean that you can do this quantum simulation as nicely as I pointed out here, or that you can perform quantum computations. There are several problems which I would like to classify into different kind of problems. So the first one would be technical problems. So the laser parameters are not perfectly controlled. So what I'm saying, just send some laser light and do perform a single qubit gate, will happen that the laser intensity will fluctuate, will not be the one that you know. There will be a laser detuning, so you will not be performing the gate that you want to perform. Or when you this lattice can jittering, or there can be some residual magnetic field which is changing the states of your qubits. So this is technical in the sense that if one improves the performance of the lasers and shields the system against magnetic fields, and at the end one can achieve some, it is called threshold, some threshold. So if the probability of error per gate is of the order of 10^-4, it has been shown how to use fault-tolerant quantum computation in order to correct all possible errors coming from these technical problems. Now there are some more fundamental problems, and these are the ones that I want to highlight here. So first of all is the presence of defects. So if you load in lattice and you want to have one atom per side, then what you do, as Immanuel was explaining in previous talk, is to load a Bose-Einstein condensate adiabatically in an optical lattice. But in reality, you will not end up with a single atom per side. And the reason for that is, first of all, because the number of atoms and number of sides are not commensurable. So there will be sides in which there will be two atoms because there are more atoms than sides, for example. On the other hand, temperature is finite, so there will be defects. So some places where there are two atoms and some places where there is some atom, there is no atom. And there can be also a residual potential. So there will be more atoms to the center than on the sides. Now, even if you would have no defect, there would be another problem, which would be the fluctuating number of atoms. So as Immanuel was saying, what you would have would be a set of one-dimensional tubes, and in these tubes there would be a different number of atoms in each of them. So it means that in this set of the particles which are in this particular tube will form a quantum computer, which will have a different number of qubits than this one here, and a different number of qubits than this one here, and you don't know how many you have. So in practice, this means that your computation cannot work, because you have to know how many qubits you have in your system. And on top of that, so even if you would have like an infinite lattice with one atom per side, then there is a third problem, which is addressability. So it's very hard to focus a laser on one of these lattice sites, because the separation of these lattice sites is typically a wavelength. So you have to focus your atom, your laser to the order of one wavelength, which is hard in practice, if not impossible. And on the other hand, in a more fundamental level, when you're performing these 2-qubit gates, I told you that you want to perform a 2-qubit gate between this atom and this atom, you have to move this atom to this one and then back. But since you have a lattice and you don't have addressability, what happens is that all the atoms will be moving at the same time. So this is just what's happening here. So there will be not a single gate between one particular atom and another atom, but there will be all of them at the same time. And so with that, you cannot perform this particular 2-qubit gates, which I was mentioning, that are necessary for a quantum computation. So there have been some ideas of how to overcome these problems. Just mentioned here some of them. So first of all, in order to correct for the presence of defects, together with a group of Peter Zoller, we propose a way of filtering the system. So in such a way that you have some random occupation and there is one or more than one atoms per lattice site, then you can just put one of these atoms into some internal state in such a way that at the end you end up with some atoms in one internal state and one atom per lattice site in some other internal state, and then you can get rid of the rest. So actually this works provided that there are no sites, there are no defects with zero atoms, otherwise you cannot put one atom here. And we showed that it works quite well in practice. So here the idea is to use a blockade mechanism. So these atoms interact. So when you put an atom here, then the second atom, when you do transfer with a laser, does not have the right energy because it would need also the interaction energy to go there. So it's not a resonance process, and this is why the atom cannot go there. Another possibility would be, well, let's not have one atom per site, but let's work with many atoms per site. So what you can do is you can store one qubit in two atoms or three atoms or four atoms, and you can do it even in a way in which you don't know the number of atoms that store your qubit. And we have shown how this would work in practice. The problem here is again that if there is some site which has zero atoms, then you cannot store any qubit there. There are not enough degrees of freedom. In order to get rid of the addressability problem, there have been some proposals, and there are current experiments working in that direction, of not using optical lattices but separated dipole traps, arrays of dipole traps or magnetic traps. In this case, the problem is that these atoms are very much separated, so the interactions would be harder to accomplish, but in principle it would be also possible. So what I want to present here is a new scheme for doing quantum computation which works in the presence of any kind of defects, and in fact it uses defects to do quantum computation. Just not to know how many atoms are on each lattice, on each of these one-dimensional lattices, and it does not need to use any addressability at all. So you just have to use global operations. So you have a laser which is acting on all the atoms at the same time in exactly the same way. So some remarks. Well, first is that somehow it resembles what is called ensemble quantum computation. And so what will happen is that we will not have a single quantum computer. What we will have is a sequence of quantum computers randomly distributed in the sample. We will be doing computations with these quantum computers without knowing where they are, but we will be able still to get all the results out of that. Well, the second point is that if I have time, I will explain at the end that this scheme is scalable. So if you put more computers, more particles, so you want to have a larger computer, then in principle it's the probability of getting one of these computers does not scale exponentially with the size of the computer that you want to have. And the other point is that it does not only work for quantum computation but also for quantum simulation. So in fact this would be a way of preparing the initial state in order to perform some quantum simulation which would be almost perfect. Okay, so let me tell you what are the rules of the game. So somehow from now on I'm going to detach from physics and explain how it works, but I want to put some rules that I take to the system coming from physics. So first of all, I'm assuming that the atoms have three internal levels, A and B. This will store the qubit somehow, and the P will be an important third level, which I will call pointer state. And this will be the one that it's used to do all the tasks without knowing what you're doing, basically. Now, I will assume also that the atoms, as in the experiments, are all in some internal level, the level A. And so what it means that initially we have all these three-dimensional lattices with one-dimensional arrays. And in these one-dimensional arrays, all the atoms are in state A, and there is random occupation, basically random occupation. So there are sites with one atom, sites with zero atoms, sites with three atoms, with two atoms, and so on. Now, then I'm going to assume that some operations are possible. So by using lasers and in the spirit of what I explained before, then some things can be done. And these will be global operations. I'm not assuming that the laser can be pointed to some particular site, but they are acting globally. So first of all, I will assume that it's possible to transfer atoms from A to P in a coherent way, so that if you have n atoms in state A, then you can transfer one and only one to level P. And if there are n minus 1 or n minus 2 or n minus 3, this doesn't change. So an example, if I have three atoms in level A, 0 and 0, then I can transfer to two atoms, 0 and 1. So this means that in all the sites where I have three atoms, and only in the sites where I have three atoms, then one of the atoms goes to the level P. And this can be done using the blockade mechanism as before. So using the fact that the interactions that the interactions between different internal states will be different, so that the resonance frequencies will depend on the number of atoms. So if I choose the one that corresponds to this transition, then this is the only one that will occur. On the other hand, I will assume also that it's possible to perform rapid oscillations between
the one with two atoms that doesn't make a transfer?
Because it's not resonant. So there is some interaction energy. And if I would transfer, then it would have a different number of atoms, would have a different energy, and therefore it would not be resonant. So I will also assume
that atoms are localized?
Yes, they are completely localized. So tunneling is switched off. Okay. Now, I will assume now also that it's possible to have Rabi oscillation between atoms. So at the same time, in all of the atoms are going from the state A to the state B and performing Rabi oscillations. I will also assume that I can move the atoms depending on the internal state. So in particular, if they are in this pointer state, that I can move them, but all of them at the same time, so wherever they are, like this here. And I will also assume that I can empty atoms, so that the atoms that are in level P, I can throw them away. So I can move them away, just moving the lattice, for example, so that they disappear. And as you see, these operations are completely global, so I cannot do something on one particular, but happen on all of them at the same time. And what I want to do is using these operations to show how to perform quantum computations without addressability and independent of the number of defects that I have. So the basic idea is to take your lattice, whatever it is, so you don't know how many atoms are there, but there will be some places in which there will be one atom. And this will be important. So these places where there are two atoms actually will be somehow special when you start moving. So they will mark the pointers. Now, apart from that, you will be interested in the places where there is an atom, and on the left there are four sites. For example, if your quantum computer will have four qubits, four sites which have two or more atoms, like for example this one here. So this is what I will call a pointer state, because it has one atom here, and then there are four sites which have more than one atom. This will also be a pointer state because of the same reason. This will not be a pointer state, because even though it has one atom, there are not more atoms to the left. And I will also assume that the pointer states are the ones in which there is not a pointer state to the right. Like, for example, here, there is not a single atom on the right, so this will be a pointer state, this will be a pointer state. But, for example, let me see, this one is not a pointer state, even though on the left there are more than one atom, on the right there is one atom, so this will not be a pointer. And now the goal will be to start moving lattices and to use the fact that there is a different, that there are these different states which have one particular atom, so they are randomly marked on your system, you don't know what they are, in order to empty everything else except for the ones that will form your quantum computer. Empty all of them, leave only four atoms here, and now use this atom and move it back and forth in order to perform gates. So basically what happens is you will have your initial state with many atoms. There will be some defects that you don't know where they are. Then you start doing global things, and you empty everything except these particular sites, which you don't know where they are, and they have a quantum computer building. And then you will start moving all the sites, and this will happen. You don't know what they are. They will happen at the same time the computation will run. And at the end, you will make measurements. You will detect some signal. And this signal will tell you what is the outcome of your computation.
Sorry, this state can be achieved with the rules that you...
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So let me show. I mean, now illustrate. I mean, there are several ways of doing. Just illustrate so how this can work. So for example, the initialization. So the first thing that I want to do is to have these situations here, so to get rid of all the atoms except for the ones that are next to the pointers and the pointers themselves. So the first thing that I do is that I remove all the atoms, the atoms which are in sites with more than two atoms. So for example, here and here there are three atoms. So what I can do is that get rid of all of them, and this is possible because you could do is you can transfer from the places where there are three atoms to the states on state P and then remove. And so these atoms will be gone. Then what I do is that I transfer all the places where there is one atom into the state P. So also with the rules that I gave you before, it is possible that all the places which have one atom, now they go to level P, and the other ones don't change because they're different. They have two atoms in these sites, and this operation cannot occur on them. Now, the next thing is to remove one atom on the site next to the pointer. So what I will move is these one atom sites, they are in the pointer, they can move to the left, and then start removing. So for example here, if there are two particles, we'll remove one, then it goes to the next one, removes one. But if it turns out that there is only one atom, then both the pointer and this atom will go away. So what it means is that, well, here it's shown, so that this atom is removing all these atoms, one of the two atoms that are next to them, all the atoms which are next to them, and this is in the case that there is This was a pointer. And at the end, we remove all the sites with two atoms, which are here. So this is also possible with the rules that I got before. So you remove all the sites, and this is what you end up with. So you end up with a lattice in which you only have the pointers and the pre-selected states without addressing them. So the remark is, well, first is that you have just somehow post-selected what are the quantum computers that you will have. This could also be used to initialize spin. And also, this could also work in two dimensions. Now, if you move the lattices in one dimension or two dimensions or three dimensions, then you could create now quantum computers which lie not in one dimension or two dimensions, but also in three dimensions. So once you have that, so how can you perform quantum computing? Well, the idea now is that the qubits will be stored in these four atoms, and you will use the pointer to perform the gates. So again, without the traceability, you will shine your laser. And for example, one qubit gates, how can they be performed? Well, you want to perform a single qubit gate here. You move the pointer to this side, then let it interact with this one here, and then move it back to the original position, and this will perform the single qubit gate. So somehow, this pointer is giving you the addressability without having to address with a laser nor anything. You're playing just with the defects, and the defects are playing the role of the system addressable. So now, two qubit gates can be done in the same way. So yes, you want to perform a two qubit gate between this particle and this particle. You first move the pointer here, and then move the pointer here, and get the phases which are required for the two qubit gates just using the physical operations that I mentioned before. What about measurement? Well, if you want to measure, so for example, if this is in state 0 on state 1, what you can do is move the pointer and move the pointer to this state, try to move the pointer into the state A. And if state A is empty, it means that the atom was in state B, so there shouldn't be any pointer anymore. So now if you look whether there is a pointer there, you will see no fluorescence, you will see that there is no pointer. So with that, you have measured that this qubit was in level A. And of course, your pointer may have disappeared, but you can start the computation once again. So as we know, this doesn't break the scale of your problem. So,
I understand. So each chain is a qubit. So if I want to zoom, am I right?
This will be like a quantum computer. This will be a different quantum computer. This will be a different quantum computer. Everything is happening in all these quantum computers at the same time. Okay. Now each quantum computer has four qubits in this case. And now you're performing a gate at the same time on these quantum computers with this defect that you're moving, with this pointer that you're moving.
So what's the single qubit rotation in this case?
Sorry?
The single qubit.
You will move, for example, you want to perform it here. Yeah. You will move this to this place here, and now let it go from the state 0 to the state 1, provided that there is a pointer present. So the pointer is marking you the position where you're doing the gate, and due to interactions, then you can do things in this particular place without doing anything in the rest. Okay, so in this way you can perform the measurements. Now let me go to the problem of scalability. So as I have presented, this quantum computer has the same problem as NMR quantum computation, ensemble quantum computation. The system does not scale. And it does not scale because it's based on probability. So namely, you start with some given configuration with certain defects. And now what you want is that there is a site with one particle, and next to it there are two, and two, and two, and two, and two, and so on. So if this is very large, you want to have a very large computer, the probability that there is one particle, and then two, 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 or not one and zero, not one and zero, not one and zero, scales exponentially with the size of your computer. So this is just the number of computers that you will have in your sample will scale exponentially, because you have to have two atoms, two atoms, two atoms, two atoms, two atoms, two atoms, or more than two, more than two, more than two, for this to work. So actually, this is what you want to avoid in quantum computation, that there is something which does not, that your quantum computer has success with an exponential probability with the number of qubits that you have. So the solution for that is to use pre-processing. And in the pre-processing, you can use the basic ideas, the same ideas as before. So basically, it's to use the sites which are more populated, which are three or four particles, and put these particles in the places where there is only one atom, just using the ideas before. The places which are empty first. So you put them in the places which are empty, and then in the places, So these extra atoms, you put them in the places where there is one atom. Of course, this does not conserve the entropy, so you have to do something to avoid that. And this is, you have to get rid of atoms. But it's still possible, yes, to move atoms. And every time that you put one atom, you get rid of another atom, and to end up with a perfect lattice in this way. So this would correct all possible defects. Now, the problem is that, of course, if we correct and get rid of all the defects, then we don't have defects. So we have to create them. And actually, this is a very simple way of creating the defects, just playing with quantum mechanics. So what you can do is just transform each of these atoms into a superposition of being in the state A plus a very, very, very tiny probability of being in level P. And now you get rid of the atoms in P. And by controlling what is this coefficient of the superposition, then you can know how many defects are you basically created, which are randomly. So what this shows is also that even if you would have a completely translationally invariant system and you have no addressability, that you can still do quantum computation. So quantum mechanics, the probability that things happen randomly, just will create the defects for you and will be. Well, no, it's not defacing. The atoms are gone. So this is one of the operations, so they can do this in the experiments. So they can select that the atoms are, taken out from the sample. And so this is one of the operations. So you have certain operations which are coherent and certain operations which get rid. It's like if in old systems for quantum computation, you need at some moment you need to measure your system. So you need some defacing there. So you have to be able to switch it on and off. Thank you. Okay, so I'm just finished. So here, I have shown a method to implement a quantum computer in optical lattice, which first of all does not require addressability, works in the presence of general defects, and it's not only that works, but it needs defects in order to work. The number of atoms does not need to be controlled, and the idea is that you will have like several quantum computers running at the same time, so you can even use here some ideas of ensemble quantum computation, and as I show you, it's also scalable. So, this doesn't mean that we can have a quantum computer next week, because all the technical problems that I mentioned before, all the physics is still behind that. So when I say, well, you have to create a superposition which has some epsilon there, or you have to perform a gate, then you have to have a perfect laser which does that. And this does not exist in practice. But if the experiments are improved and they can go to this very difficult threshold of 10 to the minus 4, then this method would allow to do quantum computations with optical lattice without addressability. Can also be used to initialize a quantum simulator. So you would like to study spin chains or spin leathers, then you can create the leather, the pattern in which there is one atom size, 20 and then 20, and then you can just start your quantum simulation there. And from a more fundamental point of view, it shows that quantum computing in translational invariant is possible. So if people would have asked me, I have a system which is translationally invariant, and I can only apply translationally invariant operations, can I factorize numbers with it? Well, it shows yes. So actually, what I was saying is just get rid of these particles, but you don't even need to get rid of the particles. So you would have now several levels. You can put them in some other internal level. So you will create a superposition in which you will have the particle in the level A and some superposition in some other levels and do all the computation. So it's hard to think, but what you will have at every moment will be a superposition of having quantum computers with different numbers and which are completely selected, and this superposition will be at all times coherent. But when you do at the very measurement at the end, then you will collapse the wave function to one particular setup of defects, and this will give you the outcome of your computation. So this shows, again, that even if you would not discard anything, you would have a quantum computer possible with a translationally invariant system. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you for a very nice talk. I think I'm going to take advantage of your chair. Namely, coming back to the Hubbard model, the quantum simulation right in the beginning, are there groups actually proceeding doing this right now?
Yes.
And when can we expect the answer?
There are people like Emmanuel or Tillman that I know that they're going the direction.
But I mean, is it work ongoing right now or what? Are graduate students somewhere right now working on this problem?
Well, in the case of Tillman Eslinger, indeed. So they have fermions already in optical lattices. Yeah.
No, quantum simulation. I mean, the Hubbard model. Anyway.
Well, I guess all these Tomsky's and Mott can already simulate.
Sure, no. But as you know, the Hubbard model is of particular interest. So lots of questions here. I hesitate to give it to our next speaker, but...
So one of the reasons I like a quantum simulator is to understand the full many-body state in the quantum lattice, which you're assuming to be ideal. And I'm wondering if you've done any thinking on how having some residual superfluid fraction, et cetera, affects your gate accuracies and so on towards realizing these types of systems.
Okay, that's a good point. Which tells you that a quantum computer and a quantum simulator are different in scope. So, of course, with a quantum computer, you can do quantum simulations. You can simulate any quantum system, and in fact, Seth Lloyd was the person who realized that. But actually, there is much better if you, it would be much better if you use the system itself. And the reason for that is that in quantum computer, the scaling of errors is very bad. If one qubit is gone, if one of your operation is wrong, then all the simulation in this, I mean, everything will be gone. Whereas if you have an analogic system, then if one out of n system is wrong, then your signal would be 1 out of 100. So this, it will still get very good results. So this is the way in which one can think in terms of errors. So you would have 10% of the atoms which are in the wrong state. Then you will have your signal at the end. When you measure some correlation function, then 10% will be wrong. So it will accumulate directly in the error. Whereas in the case of a quantum computer, yes, 10% will completely kill any computation. You have to have 1 out of all the atoms that you have in your computer is wrong, then kills your computation.
Two questions. One is about your talk. The other one is about the general question of doing computation with optical lattice in general. In your talk, do I understand that if I want to build a practical computer, then I would have to have a tiny computer with maybe about a few hundred atoms, but then with a pointer at the end? That's of course the first question. Second question is that there's often a figure of merit in the in calculation, which is the amount of time required to perform a calculation versus the coherence time. I thought the general problem in all the optical lattice calculation would be the interaction sufficiently weak. Then I think that is just the nature of these weakly interacting atoms. It's certainly true. It's possible to increase interaction either by using Rydberg or atoms, or you use a flashback resonant. But then again, suddenly you're basically, if you do things globally, you're changing all the interaction all at once. So it's a rather difficult operations. Do you have any way to overcome it?
Okay, so
a short answer.
Okay, so the question number one is that this is a particular way of doing it, and in this particular way of doing it, what you need are defects. Defects mark your point states, and then you really have to have like several, or at least one quantum computer with one defect and several atoms on the side, and this would be your quantum computer.
For
then if you would like to have now like a 1,000 atoms quantum computer, which will not happen in the next 10 years, I promise you, then what you will have, you can use some other dimensions also. Okay, so you can use that. And now the second one is that indeed the interactions are very small as compared to any interactions in some of the systems. What counts is the ratio between the interactions and the decoherence kind of time scale, interactions time scales. And what happens is that in this case, of course, what you would like to do is to increase interaction. So anything that increases interaction by a factor of 10 or 100, we could go in the right direction. But this is precisely what I'm talking about, the technical problem. So if I ask people how can they increase interactions, it's something which is not simple. But if they would manage to increase it by a couple of orders of magnitude or 3 orders of magnitude, then I think that they would be the right spot to perform some of these ideas.
As far as I understand it, maybe I'll... someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but to date, there have been no optical lattices produced which have which are strictly translation invariant, in the sense that one always has a background magnetic field. Have you made any estimates of what the effect of that would be on these possibilities?
Yes. So what I would suggest is that this would change your initial state. So this would mean that your initial state will have more atoms in the center than on the sides, because there is a residual either magnetic field or even the laser fields. So what I would then say is that just switch off these magnetic fields, and then you will have defects, and then just work with these defects as they are. So another question would be if this magnetic field is always present and you have to play with that. I would put it on the technical details then.
These panel tables are off.
Alan, thanks for hustling around the chair so quickly. I have a question about error correction. My understanding of error correction is that after a few gate operations, it allows you to measure at one site or a couple of sites, get a result which will tell you if an error has occurred, and if it has occurred, what you need to do to correct it. Now, if I have a whole bunch of quantum computers and I can't tell one from the other, some of which have had errors and some of which haven't, how do I receive the information of that measurement and then fix the error in that system? So that's one question.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you very fast. This has been worked out in ensemble quantum computation, and it's known how this can be done, because everything can be done without measurements, just coherently. So the error correction can be performed without measurements, just coherently with gates. So it's not an issue. So maybe I can explain you later on.
I'll ask you about that offline. The second question is that my understanding also is that error correction operations have to be done in parallel throughout your system, otherwise your system is not scalable.
Right.
Now, is that, do you have a similar
answer? What you can do is to have several pointers. And you would have several pointers that you could do these computations in parallel in your system. Well, yes, with a fraction. I don't know if it has to be linearly or it can be logarithmically or something, but yes.
Fernando? Yes. You are assuming that between measurements, your system is arbitrarily coherent, at least the atoms within the world. Isn't that a strong assumption in practice? Could that be an important limitation?
Yes, it's very strong, yes.
Have you made estimates in that direction? Or?
Well, this is exactly the question that Jason was asking. So one has to fulfill certain conditions in that the coherent times have to be like five orders of magnitude larger than the gate times. And if this is possible, and you can do these things in parallel, and people promise you that fault-tolerant quantum computation is possible, and you can scale up any system. So there is a threshold for that.
Ignacio, could you comment on analogies, differences, similarities with NMR quantum computation? Because your statement that quantum computation is possible in translation invariant system, I think if I were vial with some molecules, I would also regard it as in translation invariant, and I could even go so far that you could start it with a homogeneous mixture of atoms and then allow the atoms to react into molecules. Then you don't really know where the molecules are, and you could even fantasize that those molecules are coherent superposition states. In some sense, that's what you are doing. You have a homogeneous system, and you the defects or somehow create some clustering. Uh-huh. So where does the analogy break down, or how far does it go?
That's right. So there are two questions of homogeneity. First of all, you could have the whole system which is homogeneous, and you could have like many quantum computers of them. And then each of the quantum computer could be translational invariant. So there are two levels of translational invariance. And what NMR is at the big level is the same. So they have like a system in which they would have like many quantum computers, which is each of the molecules, and they don't know what they are, and they're completely delocalized. But each of the quantum computers in their case is not translational invariant, because each of the quantum computers that they have is formed by some atoms which are at different positions, and in fact they address them by frequency. So they do single qubit gates and two qubit gates for each of the molecules which form the quantum computer that they don't know where they are, but they can address them just by frequency. So here what I was saying is that even if your quantum computer would be a translational invariant, then what I do is that I break this translational invariance just by creating some defects. And once I have a defect, then I don't have any translational invariance, so I can do the computation in anyways. And then it's very similar to everything else. So I would say that's what is similar is that you have an ensemble of quantum computers at the same time, and that you cannot just measure one and say if something happened in one and not in the other one. And this, fortunately, people in ensemble quantum computation in NMR have figured out how to get rid of this problem. So one could use the same thing here.
Are there any other questions or comments? As far as I know, I was just talking to Peter Zoller last week, and he was saying that the United States is finally getting into this game and trying to develop quantum computers, but apparently optical lattices are not competitive with solid-state systems and what have you. I mean,
So well, I think that I understand that.
Is the European view differently?
Yes. Well, I think that, I mean, from the point of view of quantum information, optical lattices are unique and much better than some other systems. First of all, for quantum simulations, I mean, you would just say Hubbard model, just put it there, and it works. And you cannot do the same thing with other systems. Now, the problem that seemed to be for quantum computation is these problems that I mentioned here, addressability and so on. So I think that as long as these technical problems are corrected, this may be a way of putting the optical lattices back into the game.
Hey, Katya, I also have a slightly more general question. Let's assume your system really works, so we can put down all the technical problems. And I find it extremely fascinating. You have a self-organizing computational system. So you even could then achieve a second step that depending on your quantum computer result, you can apply a feedback, let's say a kind of classical feedback, that the computer organizes itself in a different way at the second stage, and then going on. So you could apply a fully self-organizing, very general computational skills. I mean, are there some ideas around so that a kind of switching between this quantum computation, depending on the quantum computation result, the computer organizes itself in a different way, let's say by classical means.
Interesting in quantum means.
Yes.
So you could use now and create a pattern depending of some computation. I have superpositions of having different patterns, so I have superpositions or doing computations now with quantum computers and so on. So people have thought about that, but I don't think that there is nothing that you can gain, that you can gain in terms of efficiency in some particular problem.
So way back in the corner here, this is like a TV program, and there's a young guy here who wants to ask a question.
Actually, it's to make an official statement. I'm an employee of the U.S. federal government, and in my official capacity, I'd like to deny what Alan has said. The government has not officially, although, yes, we, the federal government, fund a lot of solid-state stuff. We're also involved in optical lattice computing on several different official branches, including, I should emphasize, the United States Department of Commerce.
Thank you. Well, I think we're all ready for a coffee now, so maybe I'll stop the questions, but thank you for both our two speakers.